Welcome to the Faith Element podcast for the January 7, 2018 session, focusing on Ephesians 3, verses 1 through 12, the mystery of ministry. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Well, Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year.
Of course, as we're recording this, it's actually not 2018 yet, but it will be soon. And obviously, by the time our good listeners are using this podcast and session materials, it'll be 2018, a brand new year. So I'm curious, what are any of your rituals or habits as a new year starts? Anything? I'll start. So I tend to enjoy the dining experience around the holidays. So my ritual in January is to go into a diet mode, which I will be doing again this year.
Very good.
But after January 1st, because on January 1st, according to my family, you have to eat ham. Like eyed peas.
And
collard greens. They all mean, you know, the different things for
the new year.
Do your kids eat collard greens?
Heavens no. Okay. They don't know what they're missing.
It's good.
It's true. It's true.
I love it. I love it.
I watch a lot of football.
I try to stay awake till midnight. I don't always make it. I mean, rolling into the new year, you know. I think a long time ago, probably about 10 years ago, I met this Quaker who taught me about the birthday questions, but I like to use them at New Year's. And so, and on birthdays, because they're just good. So the questions are, in the last year, what were the three most significant events of your year? And in the coming year, what are the three things you look forward to the most?
Wow. I like that.
It's a good reflection.
I like it.
I like that.
So
it is a new year and a new opportunity. And we are beginning this year with a look in the book of Ephesians. Daniel, might you be able to get us started?
Sure, I'll give it a try. So I've been in pastoral ministry for 13 years now. If you consider that I preach roughly 46 or so Sundays a year, plus funerals, vespers, weddings, and other services, by my calculation, I've preached, almost 700 sermons. But I don't think I've ever preached on this passage from Ephesians. The reasons are varied, I suppose. For one, this passage, according to the Revised Common Lectionary, falls on Epiphany. And what do we concentrate normally on during Epiphany? The Magi, the wise men.
Yeah.
So I suspect most churches will study Matthew 2 on Epiphany Sunday. Another reason I've probably avoided this passage is because it is so mysterious. Paul admits as much. In fact, in three verses, Paul uses the word mystery three different times. So let's look a bit closer at just what Paul is calling a mystery. It seems as if Paul is speaking about his call to ministry, his epiphany of faith, as it were. The mystery Paul speaks of is not that he chose to be an ambassador for Christ, not that he found Jesus, not even that he came to a great epiphany about the faith. No, that mystery is that God chose him, that even though there may have been 100 better choices, God chose Paul to preach the gospel. This is significant, I think. Our epiphanies of faith come when we realize not that we found God, but that God has found us. That all along, God has been pursuing us lovingly, relentlessly, and God will stop at nothing until we are safe and at home. We don't even save ourselves. God saves us. We don't choose ministry. Ministry chooses us. When we come to our own epiphanies of how Christ's love has found us, we become wise men and women. See what I did there? We become wise ones not when we finally locate baby Jesus in the manger, but when we realize how that baby's love has so changed the world and changed us. Through this lens, Epiphany is not some great stroke of genius on our part, but rather much more of a surrender. That's not a word we use much anymore. David, Nikki, and Bert, do y'all remember hearing preachers speak of surrendering to the ministry?
Yes.
I don't talk like that at all, but maybe there's something to it. I know we don't like that concept. I mean, we want to win. We want to triumph. We don't want to fail. But according to Paul and according to the gospel, surrender is not the same as failure. Surrender means giving ourselves to that which we've already been called to. Surrender, in the words of James McTyre, is when we stop seeking to solve mysteries and instead allow the mysteries to solve us. That really resonates with me, because my own call to ministry can be described as a mysterious journey. It's not so much figuring out my career path, but instead trusting God to reveal that which God wants me to give my life to, my heart to. So that's a little background on our text for today.
Gosh, Daniel, that was really great, and immediately made me start remembering my own call experiences. And I don't know, it would be really interesting, I think, if maybe we shared our own call experiences. I don't think I've heard yours. So I don't know. Do y'all agree? Anybody interested?
I think that'd be a really fun exercise to hear and see if that resonates with what Paul is talking about in this text, or maybe not.
But Daniel, I loved the idea that we don't choose ministry. Ministry chooses us. And then following along that, the surrender. And yes, I do remember hearing old-time preachers talk about surrendering to the call to ministry. And I haven't thought of my own call in that way for a long time. But I think it's a perfect fit.
I mean, I guess to tell my call experience, I have to start at the end. I was finally able to articulate that I felt called to ministry. I was talking to my mom about it, and I said, Mom, you know, looking back, I realized that this has kind of been calling me for a long time in lots of different ways. Why did I not hear it until just now? And she reminded me of Samuel, how Samuel heard God calling in the temple, but did not recognize the voice at first. And so my call experience really is that all along, I sensed God calling from when I was 8 years old and felt compelled to acknowledge that because God loved me, it required something of me, to the wonderful experiences that I had as a high schooler going on youth mission trips and learning to use my own voice to talk to people about how I understood God. Oh, goodness, if I could take back some of the things I said then. You know, but we all fumble over ourselves, kind of learning the nature of our voice in articulating our experiences of God. Taking my first religion class in college and realizing that there was this whole world of understanding about Scripture that I had never really engaged before, and that it could compel me in different and new and exciting ways, and that it gave me depths of understanding in Scripture that I wouldn't have had before. To finally, and this is where it ties into exactly what you were saying, Daniel, to a United Methodist campground meeting. Now, I was a sophomore in college, and I have never in my life, at that point, been to a campground meeting. I didn't know what I was getting into, but I had some friends who were going. They needed some help with childcare. I needed to get paid. So it all worked out. But we participated in the worship services. And I mean, there was a good bit of fire and hell and brimstone being preached from the pulpit that didn't speak much of anything to me. But then at the end, there was a call made, and the song was, I Surrender All. Mm. And in those moments, in such an odd place for me to find myself, I heard God saying, It's time, Nikki. Start following this path. And so right then and there, I surrendered all. I didn't go forward. I didn't tell anybody. I just knew that my life was going to follow a path of ministry. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know how it was going to go, but that's how it happened.
I would have never, ever expected a camp revival story from Nikki.
I know.
I know. I know.
So that is before so somebody else goes, I want to ask. So Nikki, as a woman in ministry, so I mean, like, you know, Daniel mentioned and Bert both, you know, that they kind of, they had this model. Here's what a minister is called to do and be. But is that the same for a woman?
Sure. I had a lot of male models, but no, I didn't have any female models of ministry growing up. I don't think I heard a female preach until I was probably a junior in college. And it doesn't mean I didn't have good models, but no female models. And so there was a little bit of trying to figure this out and what this looked like, for sure. But I do have to acknowledge that I was incredibly fortunate. Growing up, I never heard you can't. Now, I wasn't articulating as a teenager very much that I wanted to do ministry, but I had a lot of encouragement in my curiosity about scripture. And in my, you know, I was the one who asked the question that all the chaperones were like, oh no, we're going to be up forever. And so, you know, I wanted them to explain the Trinity at 10 p.m. at night when curfew was at 10:30. That was me. And so, you know, but I never heard no. And I count myself really lucky because there are women my age who were told no a lot. But I also am really grateful to women who have gone before me in a time when women were always told no, because they paved a way that made the journey a lot more gentle for me. So,
and I have to hope that, especially for the teenagers that that watch and listen to Faith Element, that you're a model for them.
I hope so. I hope so.
Well, Nikki kind of stole my thunder.
Oh. You got your call at a campground too? Oh, really? Oh, we have that in common. That is
so I know. I never, because I'm old enough, right? But you're not. So that caught me off guard totally.
But apparently I am.
So, I mean, like others, I mean, I grew up in the church. My mom was the pianist. My dad was the music minister, even though his full-time job was, you know, at the school as the band director. And mom's job was at the school. And, but we were always at church. And, you know, I look back on it and I was very aware, even as a teenager, that it wasn't always positive, right? That it was a mixed bag. Sometimes church was really good and sometimes it was like, really? And yet, as a junior in high school, we had gone to camp, and I was when I was in grade school, you know, junior high in the day, and and then high school. I mean, I was remarkably shy, withdrawn, quiet, very nerdy, straight A's, but you know, very quiet. And so the idea of anything that would be social, you know, that would be in any way something that might put a person in a position to get attention, was not very interesting to me. And yet I found myself at the camp, and this was, you know, a youth camp. Now back in my day, the men and women had to swim in separate times. Oh. Yeah. We couldn't swim in the pool at the same time. That was bad.
You old geezer.
I am. I really am.
But anyway, you know, so it was, you know, outdoor, they had a pavilion outdoors, seated several hundred, and that's where the evening services were. And I felt it over and over, you know, the first several nights of the week we were there. And finally, by the end of the week, I just had to get up and go. And I did, you know, I walked the aisle and the whole bit, junior in high school. And so, you know, I was really sure that, oh, well, this had to mean I was going to be a pastor. Because that's what you do when you get a call, right? Mm-hmm. You're a pastor. And I remember it wasn't much later that me and my dad, we often had our best conversations when we were fishing. And so we were in the boat, and we would fish creeks, so we didn't need a motor, and Dad would just be paddling along. And he would raise issues, and we would talk about them out there in the boat. I guess he figured I couldn't get away. but no, we enjoyed them. It didn't even feel like a talk, you know. But I remember him kind of quizzing me about my call and trying to find out, you know, what I thought that might look like. And I was like, I was puzzled by it because, like, well, I'll be a preacher. I'll be a pastor. That's what you do, right? And he said, well, he said, you know, it may be. You may end up doing that. But he said, you may also find yourself doing other things. God calls people into a number of paths, and they're all worthy, and they're all living into a purpose that God is hoping for. That really stuck with me. I can remember that conversation in the boat just like it was yesterday, because I think I also heard a bit of the call in that, this opening up of my mind to realize that God's call can be varied. It can be very diverse in its expression. And sure enough, my career has borne that out. I would say I felt multiple calls because I felt a call to work in ministry, and I served in a church. And then I felt a call to express my calling through publishing, in particular, you know, curriculum materials. Mm-hmm. And then through the creation of Faith Lab and Faith Element, those things very much felt like there was something that there was a call around them. And then, you know, and now here I am at a seminary. None of this I would have predicted or could have predicted, but this idea of it be of calling being this unfolding of mystery that, you know, I'm 57 years old and I'm still being surprised by this mystery as it unfolds. And so, yeah, this text it's right on target.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed hearing y'all's stories. And I've been wondering how to tell my own. Maybe I'll start in a general way and then go to the specific. Both my father and stepmother are pastors. Both of my grandfathers are pastors. Multiple aunts, uncles. It's ministry is sort of the family trade. So for a long time, not so much anymore, but for a long time, I have asked myself, am I truly called or am I simply doing what is expected of me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Am I truly called or has this just been so modeled for me? Has this just been so much a part of my life that it's just natural? I have come to the realization that I am called to ministry, but that's a... And in weaker moments, I still have those questions. But that has been part of the journey. Second thing is, if being called to ministry means you have heard the audible voice of God saying ministry is what I have called you to, then I'm not called. Because I have not heard that audible voice. That call came in a couple of different ways, which I'll get to in a minute. And the last thing is, as some of us have mentioned, it wasn't this moment, but instead a process. So I think, to get a little more specific, I think others knew I was called to ministry before I did. I said, you know, I haven't heard the audible voice. I did hear other voices, and those were people within my church growing up, older ladies who said, you know, I think you could be a good pastor one day. I think you might want to think about that. Other ministers who took me under their wing and said, why don't we just try this a little bit? Why don't you just follow this? I think you have these gifts. So it was... I don't mind saying that I was called not by God directly, but God called me through community.
Yes. Yes.
And that was, that's a really important part of my own identity. And so even though it's sort of been the traditional path, you know, I did feel called through others to pastoral ministry, but where it hasn't been so, I guess, routine or regular is that David, I'm sure you have some students like this, but I was a card carrying member of the I'll never work in a church club. I mean,
I still have my card.
I'm tempted to re-up my membership, you know, one of these days. But I don't know. I had seen, as y'all said, church people at their best. And I mean, some of the most kind and gracious people are church members, and some of the most harsh and cruel and ugly people are church members. And I'm sorry to say that, and I suspect our listeners know that's true too. And so I said, you know, there are easier ways to put food on the table. I'm just not going to do that. But it was through my pastor during seminary, Betty Pugh Mills, who's now a pastor in Hampton, Virginia, who said, I want you to do your internship with me. I thought, well, you know, fine. I have to do an internship anyway, and I'll go ahead and get this out of my system. I'll go ahead and do, you know, the church ministry thing and be done with it. And it was through that experience that she encouraged me and said, you can do this, and you will do this. and she was right, and here I am. That's skipping a lot of steps, but that's my story.
You know, it's interesting, as much as it is ourselves feeling, sensing, hearing, and internally through all this, it's also other people telling us. It's also people who have done it themselves, had the same experiences, processed their own call, and seeing it in you and saying, this is what you need. This is who you are, and you're going to do this. I mean, and I can name people along my journey that have guided me, and also changing my, like David, like you talked about, your call changes or you get new calls along the journey. And there are just specific people who give you permission to hear a new call and to go a new direction. Yeah.
That is so true. That is so true.
Yeah.
I remember shortly after I had my, you know, I kind of said, okay, God, here we go. I went to my advisor at college and said, okay, I'm signing up to be a Christianity major. Here I am. And he asked me why. And I said, well, I feel called to ministry. And at the time, I thought it would be youth ministry. And he just looked straight at me and he said, have you ever thought about being a pastor?
Really?
Hey.
He did. And it has, for those of you who know, it was Buddy Sherden. And I laughed at him when he said it. and I said, no, sir. Not at all. But it stuck. That one question, it still nags at me. To this day. And it had an incredibly profound effect on me. I encourage ministers and pastors and college people, ask those questions because they stick and they matter.
I think it's interesting. I can't remember the research that was done, but there was, I believe, a Lilly-funded study some years ago that looked at this dynamic. If you watch, if those of us who are able to kind of pay attention to multiple churches at once, you realize there are certain churches that more people seem to hear a call out of those churches than in other churches.
Right.
And so the question was, what is it about these congregations that leads more persons to kind of bubble up out of there and find a vocation in ministry? And I have to think, and it seems like I remember some of the research really underscored what Daniel, you were saying, was this, that the community does call us. There is a role for the Buddy Shirts and the, you know, and the kind women and the people who are Sunday school teachers or whomever who encourage us along, who say, hey, I noticed something in you. And I mean, it really does make a difference.
It does.
And it may be one of the things we can all do better is in our congregations, pay attention to people around us. And I would say not just to the young people. Sometimes yes. I think we have the stereotype that right. young people are the ones God calls. But I know here at BSK, an increasing number of our students are second
absolutely.
Career
yeah.
or third career. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same thing at McAfee, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And these are really, I mean, I've been fascinated to meet these people who have built a career yes. in a certain area, and it may be ministry related or nearby, or
it might
or
not.
It yeah, some of them it hasn't been, mm-hmm. and here they are ready to embark upon a new journey, and it's so exciting because for them they are young again.
Yeah, right. And I will speak to that because my first experience at seminary was going straight through college and going straight to seminary and then leaving, and my third and final time was after. Roughly 10 years. And in those 10 years, I got a master's in sociology. I was teaching sociology. I was working in a juvenile court setting in two different major cities, doing probation work and working in bureaucracies and paperwork and keeping hours and all that kind of stuff. And the real world job experiences and family experiences that I got are part of the reasons that helped shape me into being a better minister when I did finally get back to seminary and stick with it and then get into church work yeah. versus people whose entire career from the time they walked through college straight through seminary into a church have always been in a church. There's a different perspective. There's a different paradigm. There's a different understanding mm-hmm. of life, I think, that we older students bring. I want to share something I wrote about my own experience, actually, when I was in seminary at Baptist Seminary of Kentucky for the third time, and processing my journey, the mystery of calling, mm-hmm. and all the things that we've talked about. And it's from my first book, Elvis, Willie, Jesus, and Me, and it's called The Disney Totem, or Why I'm a Baptist Preacher. Will Campbell tells of a friend named Thad Gardner. Thad was somewhat of a rough-talking, arm-twisting, manipulative type of man from Louisiana who knew how to get things done. But more importantly, Thad Gardner was a Baptist preacher. And one day, while having a frustrating hunting experience, the Reverend Gardner tore into a storm of vulgarities, prompting Will Campbell to ask him, "Thad, why did you ever decide to be a Baptist preacher?" And Thad, seeming somewhat upset by the question, declared, "'Cause I was called, you blankety-blank fool." Now, offensive? Of course. But there's something terrifyingly true here. When the shock or the hilarity of the cussing preacher wears off, I am faced with this offense. Each of us have specific gifts for specific purposes over which we do not have control. Our choice is simply whether or not to heed the call. "'Cause I was called," Thad said. Now, not so long ago, some friends treated my family and me to a Disney movie. Brother Bear is an animated movie about a Native American growing from a boy into a man, and he is given his totem, a small statue representing a particular virtue that he will come to embody. Now, he rejects this totem. It's not consistent with his self-identity. It's not what he envisions for himself. And we follow him on his journey through which he is constantly at odds with this totem. Certainly, he was given the wrong totem. Surely, the totem giver was mistaken. But through great struggles, some of them life-threatening, he becomes aware of and accepts who he is, and he indeed comes to personify his totem. There simply is no escaping it. "'Cause I was called," Reverend Gardner says. Brother Bear treated me to an epiphany in, of all places, the cinema bathroom. While I was washing my hands, I looked up into the mirror, and there stood the young boy who somehow knew that he would be a preacher. And there stood the boy hearing his grandmother and extended family talk about him growing up to be the preacher in the family. Now, which came first, the knowing or the hearing? There stood the rebellious heavy metal preteen. There stood the church-loving teenager active in his youth group. There stood the token hippie at the small Baptist college and the long-haired, ear-pierced, rabble-rousing, failing at his first try at seminary. There stood the radical sociologist ready to change the world, and there stood the depressed cynic who had given up on the world and on life itself. And there stood the man of renewed faith, rocking and rolling with youth groups, and the apostate who denounced his belief in the program orientation of the institutional church. There I stood. Now, as I was typing this, Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings are singing through my computer speakers, and compact discs and vinyl records and cassette tapes surround me, and I look up and I see an Elvis clock with his legs swinging back and forth as the pendulum, and my walls are covered with posters of the Beatles and Bob Dylan and the original Woodstock Music Festival. But just as visible in this hippie, hillbilly, countercultural shrine are Bibles and commentaries and books galore about God and the church, and favorite quotes from Shakers and Quakers and monks and preachers, and hymns and church music are also frequently heard, and taped on the wall next to Elvis's timekeeping hips is a photo of me with Will Campbell. Now, other than being from Louisiana, I don't have much in common with Will's friend, the Reverend Thad Gardner. But come visit me sometime and let me tell you about when I met B.B. King or got to get to hang out with Arlo Guthrie. Come spend a day with me at an outdoor music festival, and you will soon learn that if I had my druthers, I'd rather talk to Neil Young than with just about any important religious leader you can name. So you see why I'm confused as to why I am an ordained Baptist preacher. And yet here I am. It's for reasons too mysterious for my own understanding, and for reasons I have no right to know. It's 'cause I've been called.
Well, may we all embrace the mystery that is certainly a part of our ongoing callings. Thank you for this conversation.
Thank y'all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.